Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Matt Eddy, I'm John Manuel. We continue our series of postseason Major League Baseball podcasts here at baseballamerica.com, downloadable at iTunes and wherever your podcasts are sold. Matt, just a riveting American League Championship Series. We had a little delay there after the National League Yawn Series with the Phillies winning that, correctly predicted by yours truly. But the American League Championship Series, riveting seven games, correctly predicted by you. So we have a Tampa Bay Rays, Philadelphia Phillies, World Series. Anybody who picked that one, I think other than Kreskin, probably no one picked that one.
Uh-uh.
I don't think anybody had that one. We'll start off with just an interesting point, I think, to note, a little trivia. So with Tampa Bay making it to the World Series, winning the American League pennant, Matt, that leaves three franchises out of your 30 that have never gone to the World Series. Texas, the Rangers, the Seattle Mariners, so two of them in the American League West,
yep.
Which frankly makes you really want – if you're in a fantasy football league and you're looking at your divisions in the preseason, you're like, I want to be in that division. I want to be in there with those owners. You look at the – you want to be in the American League West. Obviously, the Angels have only won one. The A's are a dynasty that have been a dynasty twice in their history. They've won three straight pennants. That's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Yankees are probably the only other team that's ever done that. I haven't actually looked that up. But it sounds neat. But the A's have been up and down, though, their entire history, Philadelphia, Kansas City, Oakland. And then you got these two franchises that have never been to the World Series in Texas and Seattle. And then, of course, in the National League, Les Expos / Les Nationals.
Well, it's more condemning for the Nationals because they don't have to contend with the Yankees and the Red Sox on an annual basis.
I think you're right.
Like the American League teams do.
I think it is more damning for them. And, of course, you have your asterisk in a way with Montreal with 1994 and the best record in the major leagues.
Yeah.
You know, kind of what might have been. But that's 14 years ago, and they're only the Jonah Careys of the world and the few Michael Levesques and the few Expos fans out there really. And I'm sure Ken Hill somewhere is thinking what might have been. But But this was an amazing American League Championship Series, Matt. I think two things stand out to me in this championship series. I mean, the national media, and rightly so, I think, very praiseworthy and focusing a lot on the Red Sox and their ability to come back, not just from 3-1 down to force a Game 7, but from 3-1 down and down 7-0 in Game 5. That was an amazing game. I think credit goes to Boston for coming back, and some blame, certainly spoonfuls of blame can be ladled out all over the Rays for that one, for blowing that 7-0 lead. But then kudos, I think, to the Rays for coming back to win a very tough Game 7, a very tense Game 7. And I think, to me, what stands out the most is that talent won out. John Lester was good. Matt Garza was better. Boston's bullpen in this series was pretty good. Last night, David Price was better. Tampa went with talent, a 2005 first-round pick in Matt Garza, 2007 first overall pick in David Price. Obviously, Garza was the Twins' first-round pick in 2005, and Price was the number one overall pick last year for Tampa. But pretty crazy to see those guys, really truly Baseball America-type guys, especially Price, less so Garza because we weren't, frankly, as on Garza as an amateur
mm-hmm.
as we should have been. But just amazing to see those guys, really talent won out over experience.
Yeah, especially in terms of the power arms. I mean, Matt Garza hitting 97 consistently. Kazmir got a little bit of his velo back in Game 5.
He did.
Another former first-round pick.
Great point.
Not a former, I should say. A first-round pick.
Yeah.
And
once a first-rounder, always a first-rounder.
I think Shields was touching 94 a few times.
Shields threw well in his second start, but he as good as he was during the regular season, and he was their ace. He clearly is not at his best. James Shields' best is not as good as Scott Kazmir's best, Matt Garza's best, and I believe what David Price's best will be. And it just was amazing to me to see David Price on the mound with all the money on the table last night. 3-1, eighth inning, bases loaded, J.D. Drew at the plate, and like the fifth pitcher of the inning is David Price. I mean, I just thought that was crazy, and I did not think it was terrible. I thought it was kind of awesome. And I grew up a Red Sox fan. I had my Red Sox jersey on last night. You know, my Sox fandom ebbs and flows since 2004. It's kind of, but I think there was a little talisman, Matt, of the Red Sox were not going to win a World Series this year, and that my wife was not pregnant and did not give birth to a child in October. My son born in October 04, daughter born October 07, good months for the Red Sox. No child for me this year in 08, so I wonder if the Red Sox are in for a drought of historic proportions now. now that hopefully my family is not going to expand. But on a serious note, I really do think that the key was, like you said, those power arms, and that's come up again and again in postseasons over the years. And Tampa got them, and I do think we talked about this off-air, quote-unquote. Now let's talk about on-air. I think Joe Maddon learned from the mistake of Game 5 in Game 7 and five pitchers employed in the eighth inning. And with everything on the table, he went matchup. And I just think the most telling part of that is that David Price was the guy that he left for the end, mm-hmm. not a J.P. Howe, who I would have expected it would be J.P. Howe. But he went for talent over experience. I think that was telling. I think that, to me, is what makes the Rays the Rays. Joe Maddon deserves all the credit. But they've drafted high. They have extreme talent. And they let they got out of the way of their talent in some ways, and they put their talent in position to succeed last night. I thought that was the key to the series, and ultimately I think they're more talented than Boston.
They did, yeah. Maddon did learn from that experience. It made for a boring inning, perhaps, because it was more than 45 minutes in length.
A tense inning, certainly, but not the kind of pace that you'd like, certainly. You're right.
But he learned from maybe a little overexposing ball for a little bit in Game 5.
Game 5 was kind of remarkable, and you talked about this a little bit earlier, again, off-air, so I'll let you expound on it now. What do you think he did wrong in Game 5, besides helping blow a 7-0 lead? But what did he do in Game 5 that he did wrong that he learned from, you think, in Game 7?
Well, the three big things, I don't think he assessed Balfour very well, because he gave up hits to three of the first five batters he faced. I think he retired the 8 and 9 hitter.
Right.
And then he's throwing just low mid-90s fastballs, and a hitter like David Ortiz is geared to hit low 90s fastballs out of the park.
No, you're right.
So Ortiz gets that pitch the second time, and he crushes it. And I think if you bring in a lefty, of which he's carrying three,
yeah,
Ortiz at most hits a single, let's say. He's probably not going to be able to pull a left-hander's quality breaking ball out of the park.
A lot less likely that he's going to hit a home run.
So it's still 7-2 at that point.
Right.
And then you bring in Chad Bradford to face Youkilis and Bay, who I think were back-to-back because Kazmir started.
Absolutely.
So,
and Youkilis has struggled basically his entire – every time he's faced.
So you're set up. I mean, it takes three pitches to get through it under that scenario, but
yeah, no,
I think you're in better shape.
I think, to me, that was a systematic failure of the Rays in that game. It's hard to blow a 7-0 lead. I think taking out Kazmir with that pitch count is stupid. I mean, just frankly stupid. Watch, again, like you said, correctly assess your talent. Your guy's throwing the hell out of the ball. I could use stronger language, but Scott Kazmir was in no threat of being hit hard. And I thought he was at the full command of his stuff.
He was facing the bottom of the order, too, in the 7th inning.
Facing the bottom of the order in the 7th inning. I just think reliance on pitch counts is ridiculous. Watch the quality of the stuff and the command. That will tell you when the pitcher needs to come out, period. I am so not a believer in pitch counts. And I don't believe they have no value. I just don't believe they should dictate everything. And in that case, especially with your season on the line, I think you let Scott Kazmir keep on pitching until he shows you he's not good anymore. And they didn't put Grant Balfour in position to succeed by letting him face Ortiz. And again, why do you have three left-handed pitchers in your bullpen if you're not going to use
particularly Trevor Miller? Trevor Miller has to be leveraged against left-handed sluggers with men on base. That's the only reason you're carrying him.
Otherwise, he shouldn't exactly.
He shouldn't be on the roster.
Extremely correct. Couldn't agree with you more. It's the Baseball America podcast. He's Matt Eddy that I'm agreeing with. I'm John Manuel. I'm agreeing with him. And honestly, we didn't agree pre-show, but he's kind of convinced me. I do think the more I think about it, the more blame I put on that for Joe Maddon. I give credit to the Red Sox for coming back, though. And then Josh Beckett for kind of a gutsy performance in Game 6 when he clearly is not at his best. And I think ultimately when we talk about the Red Sox, and we didn't talk about that before the show, ultimately Boston just was not at its best in this series, and what they had was not good enough. They didn't have Mike Lowell.
Yep.
I think the combination of not having Manny Ramirez in their lineup after the trade, Jason Bay is good, but he's not as good as Manny Ramirez.
Not as a hitter.
So you take that little step down, then you take Lowell's bat out of the lineup, replace it with Kotze, clearly not as good, or hurt your defense, not that much, because Kotze was very good, surprisingly good at first base, mm-hmm. and Youkilis very good at third base. But ultimately, our lineup was not as strong, Big Poppy not as good, David Ortiz just not at his best, whether that's physical or whether it was earlier physical, and then he overcompensated for the wrist, and that led to mechanical issues in his swing. That's what I really think it was.
Mm-hmm.
But Boston, and then they're starting pitching without Beckett being dominant, not at its best. I thought Boston would have been a worthy representative for the American League, and I still think they would have been favored over Philadelphia, But I think Tampa clearly showed they were better. Two games better in the regular season, both over the course of the overall schedule and the head-to-head, and then better over the 25 games they played, 14 and 11, I guess, against Boston. Why do you think, I guess, Matt, if we're just going to try to boil it down, over those 25 games, what made Tampa better than Boston in your mind?
But focusing solely on October, the three championship players who carried them last year were either absent or not nearly at full strength.
Yeah.
Beckett, Ortiz, and Ramirez.
Great point.
I mean, Beckett and Ortiz were at 75% max, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And then not having Ramirez hurt them, too.
As good as Pedroia and Euclid are,
right.
They're both extremely good. They're great major league players. They're both legitimate MVP candidates this year in the American League. I think Boston ultimately did miss the guys who were the difference makers for them, really, in their both championships. The one common thing between those two championships, Ortiz and Manny in the middle of the lineup.
Yep.
And ultimately, that
strength.
Was missed. At full strength. And ultimately, they did not have that, and they did not succeed in this year's playoffs.
And Beckett at full strength, obviously.
And Beckett at full strength was the guy who started the 3-1 comeback last year. And
yeah.
You know, John Lester, as good as he was all year, and he was very good, I thought, in Game 7, at his best – not quite Josh Beckett's best, and that's one of the reasons why Tampa Bay is moving on. The other reason I think just Tampa Bay is better, you know. And you have to give to me. I thought it was great to see B.J. Upton afterwards give a lot of credit to the training staff and personnel with Tampa, because he's had this shoulder injury all year that I haven't really seen publicized, frankly, during the season. But you know, one of the remarkable things about B.J. Upton, he had a very good year this year, but he went from slugging about .510 in 2007 to .398 in this year's regular season. He slugged under .400, Matt, and we saw him for 2 years here in Durham, one very good year and one mediocre year. We saw the power in B.J. Upton here with our own eyes. We need to talk to scouts about how easy his power was, especially to all fields. It's a little more pull power right now, but, God, the Red Sox tried to pitch him inside the whole series and failed miserably.
But they finally got around to, in Game 6 and 7, to throwing only outside.
They did. They finally adjusted.
Even Lester.
After in Games 24 and 25 against the Rays, they finally adjusted. But Longoria, Carl Crawford, whose athleticism really was most on display last night in the post-game dogpile celebration, he sprinted in from left field and then got some serious air when he jumped onto
the
dogpile. But that team... second-round pick, $2 million-plus bonus in left field, Crawford. First-round pick, second overall in Upton. First-round pick, sixth overall when Baldelli's out there. Obviously, he's not the athlete.
Gabe Gross, that, also a first-rounder.
I was going there. Even Willie Ibar, when he's a platoon or DH guy, and he had a huge game in Game 7. That guy got $1.4 million from the Dodgers. Evan Longoria, third overall pick in 2006. You know, Bartlett is a 13th-round pick, originally the Padres.
Brian Buchanan, right?
Nice trade. Stay hot, KT. Hey, KT's had some great trades. That's not one of his better ones. Carlos Pena was a first-round pick. And Diana Navarro was once the number one prospect of the Yankees organization. It was a big deal. Aki Uemura is basically a big league free agent, you know, somewhat coveted. Then Garza, first-rounder. Kazmir, first-rounder. James Shields and Jason Bartlett are really the guys who are the kind of the surprise guys on that team. Dan Wheeler, kind of a surprise guy, but J.P. Howell was the 31st overall pick in a draft.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason they have. My point is the Rays are an extremely talented team. It's not just the 97 wins. You can't just look at that. They have talent everywhere.
And balance.
And they have balance. They have right. They have left. It is an impressive roster. No one thought that they would go from 66 wins to 97 wins. That's hard to predict in the history of baseball. That just doesn't happen, 31-win improvement like that. But when you look at it, it is logical that a team with that much talent would win this many games. Now, I guess the question, Matt, is how do they seal the deal? Let's match them up with the Phillies. Because the Phillies are also a pretty talented team. First-rounders all over the place there, too. I mean, Ryan Howard wasn't a first-rounder, but he was on Team USA as a sophomore. He was expected to be a first-rounder. He just had a horrible junior season. Pat Burrell, first overall pick in a draft. Utley, the best first-round pick in the 2000 draft. You could argue him or Brandon Webb, best player out of the entire 2000 draft, basically. But Jason Worth, supplemental first-round pick. You know, Shane Victorino wasn't a high draft pick, but he was a Rule 5 pick twice. I mean, teams knew these guys had talent on both clubs. How do you match them up? Let's just start off, I guess, offensively. The Phillies certainly seem to have the better offense than the Rays have. How do you think that plays out, just matchup-wise, Phillies pitching versus Rays hitting and Rays pitching versus Phillies hitting?
It should be pretty even. The one disadvantage the Philly might have is in games in the American League Park regarding the DH.
Yep.
I mean, if they're facing a right-hander, that's fine because they have Matt Stairs or Jeff Jenkins.
Right.
Or Greg Dobbs.
Absolutely.
But they're going up against Kazmir in game one, likely.
Yes.
And that means you're probably going to want a right-handed DH, in which case it's, what, Sotoguchi, it's Eric Bruntlett, it's Chris Coast.
Yeah, those are your options.
I mean, pick your poison.
None of those options are as good as Matt Stairs versus a righty, Greg Dobbs versus a righty, or Jeff Jenkins versus a righty. No, you're absolutely right. So in that matchup, in that first game, certainly going to be an advantage, I think, for Tampa. And, of course, the reason you have four games scheduled with a DH and three without is Brad Lidge, the only save he blew all year, only game he blew, he didn't blow a save. Did he blow a save in that game, or did he just blow
it? In the All-Star game you're talking about?
In the All-Star game.
I don't know.
I don't remember how that worked out, but, I mean, he was the one either blew the game, either got the loss, or he blew the save in the All-Star game, so now the American League has a home field advantage. Obviously, Tampa would have earned it if you just went on best regular season
right.
record anyway.
Which it should be.
Which it should be. You know, this time it counts. All that stuff is kind of hoo-ha. It's ridiculous. But yeah, Tampa has home field, so that is going to be to their advantage.
Yep.
And I agree with you. I think it's a great point. conversely, you know, Tampa does have a lot of left-handed bats.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cole Hamels and Jamie Moyer both match up fairly well from the Philly standpoint against Tampa. I think, again, that's the two huge keys for Tampa's offense, as they have been throughout this postseason, for me, are B.J. Upton and Evan Longoria. If B.J. Upton's going to keep on hitting for power, I mean, nine homers regular season, seven in the postseason.
Yep.
I think Tampa's offense at least matches Philadelphia's offense. To me, Philadelphia's a very streaky offensive team, and at its best, the Tampa pitching staff should have enough to kind of keep Philadelphia in check. So I think that's at least a push. I think I like Tampa's starting pitching better than I like Philadelphia's. I think the offense is kind of a push for me. I think the DH factor is actually a significant one. It might be two of those games out of seven where Tampa's really at an advantage with Kazmir's left-handed, being left-handed against Philadelphia's lineup. But we'll see how Tampa sets its rotation. But I think that could be a factor.
But Matt Stairs is very familiar with playing DH. So
absolutely.
So in three of the four games, it should be actually an advantage over most other National League teams.
Plus, how can you root against Matt Stairs? he's Canadian, number one, so unless you're anti-Canadian, an anti-Canadian bigot, then you shouldn't root against him. But second of all, I mean, his quotes after that home run in the series against the Dodgers were awesome. Oh, let's go up there trying to hit home runs. It's fun. I try to hit every ball out of the park in BP. I mean, it's just awesome. I think only a Canadian would admit that. But the other part of, I guess, the rust factors and that's being thrown around up there, Matt.
Uh-huh.
You think that's a factor for Philadelphia? Do you think that's going to affect them in this series?
I don't know. I mean, it can't be quantifiably proven, but if the players believe in it, then that's the most important thing. I mean, psychology is a huge part of the game.
No, you're right.
And, you know, if the players believe it's a factor, then it's a factor.
And I think the players are probably going to think it's a factor if they watch the 2006 World Series.
The last two World Series.
You're right. In that case, ignorance really might be bliss.
Yeah.
A lot of players talk about how they don't like to watch the game, and if you didn't watch the Rockies and you didn't watch the Tigers, it's probably good because both those teams had a lot of rest, a lot of days off. I guess the Rockies equaled the Phillies in terms of an eight-day layoff. That was probably good for Philadelphia if they didn't pay attention. But guess what? Even if they didn't pay attention, that's all the media is going to ask them about the next couple of days. So if they haven't already been asking it, which I'm sure they have.
I don't know if you saw SportsCenter this morning, but both John Kruk and Steve Phillips both predicted the Phillies to win the World Series.
I did see that.
Well, how do you feel about that? I mean, far be it from us to disagree with a fine ball player like John Kruk.
You know, I think Steve Phillips' reason was a logical reason. They do have a better bullpen, and their bullpen, I think, probably actually benefits from the rest a little bit. Throwing on the side, all that kind of stuff, I think helps. I do think it's huge that Philadelphia, I think that's been Philadelphia's biggest strength all year.
Yep.
Has been its bullpen. Their offense has been streaky.
Mm-hmm.
Their starting pitching outside of Hamels has been a little up and down.
Mm-hmm.
The constant through the season for them has been their bullpen. So from that standpoint, I thought Steve Phillips' prediction made a lot of sense. John Kruk's prediction means absolutely nothing to me. I mean, he played for the Phillies.
But he played for the Phillies, yeah.
He coached in the Phillies system, which is – I loved that. He coached for a couple months, and he packed it up and packed it in. Thanks for finishing with your start, John. Sorry they didn't have enough donuts on the freaking training table every day for John Kruk to go through one season as a minor league coach, but which is just ridiculous for me. It's just lame. But, I mean, I picked the Phillies, I believe, to win the National League. I think I picked them to lose to the Red Sox. in the World Series, starting all this stuff. I think I'm picking them to lose to the Rays in this series because I think the rust factor is a factor. I just think Tampa's a little bit more athletic, a little bit better defensively. It's close, but I do think, frankly, it helps to play and keep playing. I think Tampa just winning the series the way they did against Boston is just going to be such a huge confidence boost for that team. And frankly, I think you see it. Game one, I mean, if you're matching up best versus best, Hamels versus Kazmir, that's pretty much a push.
Mm-hmm. Well, 2002 draftees.
2002 draftees in the first round, I think three picks apart or two picks apart. Both in your 2003, that loaded, that big feature we did on the Florida State League, you had Hamels, you had Kazmir, and you had Greg Miller. Oh, unlucky. And then
he's still left-handed, though.
He is still left-handed. He's still playing. He just has half a shoulder left from what he had back in 2003. Bill Bevesi, I think, probably had something to do with that. Maybe I'm wrong. But jumping an 18-year-old to Double A in his first full season doesn't seem like it makes a whole lot of sense. But that's what they did. And then the other factor there to me is just I think Joe Maddon has learned from his mistakes, and that team learned from their mistakes. I think B.J. Upton learned from not going all out during the regular season and getting benched twice by Joe Maddon. I think Jason Bartlett and Evan Longoria probably would be better for having screwed up in 10 situations, which Jason Bartlett did again last night in Game 7. Those guys have to be better, I think, defensively and more consistent because they've failed and lived to tell about it, and you learn by failure. So I like Tampa's mojo going into this. I think the city of Tampa's mojo, as far as the Buccaneers have won a Super Bowl, the Lightning have won a Stanley Cup, Philadelphia, 25 years with no championships in that city. that's interesting for me as a side note. I think Tampa is a slightly better team. I think Tampa will probably win this in about six games.
Well, you can't make me take the Phillies here. We got to take different sides. I got to take the Rays too. But and let's not forget
we don't have to take different sides. We can both pick the Rays. We're counterbalancing John Kruk and Steve Phillips' picks here. Just think of it that way.
And let's not forget, not to be overlooked, the Rays beat a better team in the LCS.
Great point.
That speaks volumes about their ability.
I think when you're looking at Kazmir versus Hamels push. You're looking at Jamie Moyer's guts and guile and all that stuff versus James Shields, who's also a changeup pitcher, obviously a very different pitcher, but that's kind of a push. Jamie Moyer won 16 games this year, and he's really, really good. He's had a great career, unbelievable career. But let's give Jamie Moyer some credit. Just to be charitable, I'm going to say that's a push. Then you're talking about Joe Blanton versus Matt Garza. I mean, hello.
And plus, the Rays have seen Joe Blanton before.
They have.
They're used to his short stride and short arm delivery.
And his cankles. I mean, his sports writer-like cankles. So, I mean, I think Tampa's starting pitching is better. I think they have more power arms. I think their bullpen is not as good as Philadelphia's. But, boy, right now, even if Balfour's struggling a little bit, David Price is a weapon. And I think the wraps are off. David Price. If you can get the last four outs of an LCS and you can strike out J.D. Drew with everything on the line, guess what? I think the ghost of Van Buskirk, I believe was the outfielder's name, from Michigan, who took David Price deep in the regional at Vanderbilt. And that ghost is banished. Michigan got it done against David Price. The Red Sox could not. So, I think that you have to give – I think the wraps are off. I think David Price is an extra weapon. He's not just a left-on-left guy. You have two guys in Howe and Price – to go with a Dan Wheeler, who I think can finish out games, and you have the flexibility of Grant Balfour. If he's regular season Grant Balfour, all the better. You have another weapon. If he's postseason Grant Balfour, well, you kind of make up for him with the power arm of David Price. So I think Tampa's bullpen isn't quite as good as Philadelphia's, but it's better just today than it was 2 days ago because Joe Maddon's learned from his mistakes, and David Price has the added experience and the added confidence coming off of what he did against Boston last night.
Maybe you don't want to pitch Balfour so much in Philadelphia because it looks like most of his pitches are hit pretty well in the air.
I think you're right. I think
maybe you keep him in Tampa.
I think where there's cowbell, there's Grant Balfour. where there's guys throwing snowballs at Santa Claus and booing a guy getting taken off the stretcher, you might want to leave Grant Balfour back in the bullpen or use him in low leverage situations. It's a Baseball America podcast. He's Matt. I'm John. We're both picking the Rays for the World Series, Matt. Anything non-World Series you want to touch on before we sign off the
podcast? I'm glad you brought that up. But okay. With the Rays making the World Series now, all four of the most recent expansion teams, the Rays, the Rockies, the Marlins, what's that other team, the Diamondbacks, all four of them, and if the Rays win, three of the four will have won the World Series since the last time the Mets, the Cubs, or the Dodgers have even been in the World Series.
It's startling when you look at we mentioned those three franchises at the start of the show that have not ever been to a World Series. How about the Giants have obviously have been this decade, even 2002, but how the Giants not winning since 1954? How about the Indians not winning since 1948, which we didn't mention?
The Giants have had three cracks at it, right, in San Francisco, 62, 89, and 02.
I think you're right. I think those are their three pennants. And, of course, 62, they came awfully close. But they've never won a World Series in San Francisco. I mean, that is remarkable.
Despite having two of the best players the last 50 years. Bonds and Mays.
You could argue they had the two best players.
Yeah.
I mean, Hank Aaron has something to say about that, obviously. Yeah. But two of the three. I mean, you talk about position
and
players.
And Marischal and Gaylord Perry.
Yeah.
And Kirk Reeder.
I wonder how much of that you really can tie to Kirk Reeder. Nice. You almost left that one in. But, I mean, how much can you tie to that ballpark where they played? I mean, they've I don't know. I don't know how much of that goes to Candlestick. I don't know how much of it goes to
It's inexplicable.
It is inexplicable. I can't explain it. I really can't. But how about the Cubs? How do you explain the Cubs? 63 years without even a pennant. Hard to believe.
And seven of the other eight longstanding NL franchises have won the World Series since the Cubs last even appeared in the World Series.
Yeah, and this year's Cubs collapse obviously has been chewed over a lot, but it just stands out even more when the Rays and the Rockies have been in the postseason. I've been in the World Series the last 2 years. I mean, the Indians, you know, let's blame Joe Table and Tony Fernandez for that one. They had the 97 series there to win, and that they could not close that deal out. We actually have staffers. Did you know this? We'll have staff members, Matt Blood and Nathan Rohde, going down to Tampa for either Game 1 or Game 2 of the World Series because they're going to Jupiter for the World with Bat Perfect Game Showcase this next weekend, 25th, 26th, right in there. It's like a five-day sprawling event. But so they're going down a day early to go to the World Series, either Game 1 or Game 2. I forget which one they're going to clear across the state of Florida, not in Jupiter, obviously. But so that's kind of neat, so we'll have that take on it. And lastly, Matt, I do think being in Durham, based in Durham, North Carolina, as we are, it's pretty neat to see all these guys that we saw in Bulls uniforms go through. I mean, Rocco Baldelli back in the day.
Carl Crawford
back in the day. Evan Longoria just last year and the beginning of this year.
All we're missing is Toby Hall, really.
P.J. Upton for 2 years. Johnny Gomes. All we knew that Johnny Gomes, not on the roster, but we knew that Johnny Gomes was going to be first on the dog pile with his mohawk and untucked shirt and just general ragamuffin appearance. You knew Johnny Gomes was going to be out there first on the dog pile. But that's a pretty homegrown Tampa team. And a lot of those guys, James Shields, a lot of those guys were Durham Bulls.
Fernando Perez,
shocking that he's on the it is shocking to me. I mean, he's a pretty cool guy. Fernando Perez, again, another guy who's it's impossible to root against, really. But all they're missing is Elliot Johnson and Toby Hall, like you said, and Chris Richard, maybe.
Dare we touch on Gabe Gross, or are we out of time, or what?
I think we're out of time. Maybe we're out of time for Gabe Gross. We'll see if Gabe Gross is even on the World Series roster. But congratulations to the Durham Bulls locally. I think it's pretty neat that all these Durham Bulls are in the World Series. So we're both picking the Rays, and I do think it'll be a good series, but we'll see if Tampa can finish this amazing story of worst to first and all the other cliches you're going to hear. But to me, just right now, talent is winning out in baseball's postseason. That's another Baseball America podcast. You can email us for next podcast at podcast@baseballamerica.com. I'm sure we'll have some non-major league podcasts coming up soon here at baseballamerica.com. Until then, for Matt Eddy, I'm John Manuel. So long, everybody.